The St. Louis Filmmakers Showcase continues tonight with yet another extraordinary film. It's titled Gabe and tells the story of St. Louis and Gabe Weil. His disability, Duchenne muscular dystrophy. In spite of its debilitating physical limitations, Gabe refused to let this condition define him. The film is emotional and powerful. Joining me to talk about Gabe, the film, and Gabe, the young man, are Luke Terrell, the director of the film, Brian Chow is Gabe Weil's best friend, and Amelia Weil is Gabe's sister. Thank you all so much for being with us.
Thanks for having us.
I was just saying, off the air, I watched the film yesterday. Luke, congratulations to you for your role in that. It's a terrific film, and folks should see it, and it's very, very emotional. Emotional for you, too, I'm sure, to make it, because Gabe was a buddy.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, my relationship with Gabe started actually as I was his note taker at college. We both went to Wash U at the same time. He was looking for a new note taker. I took on the job, and then we very quickly became good friends after that, started hanging out socially, realized we had a lot in common, a lot of shared interests. And, yeah, he became a very good friend, and we went on this pretty crazy journey together making the film. So,
well, Amelia, the fact that Gabe was at Washington University is, and of itself, a story, because I don't think early on many people expected actually for him to be alive that long to go to school.
Yeah.
Tell us about your reaction to what you've seen in the film.
I was actually really surprised by the film. I was surprised by how well it was put together and directed. I really thought that, for me, it's very hard for me to sit still and watch a film, especially a documentary. And this one just kept me in tune the whole time. Not even just because it was my brother, but just because of more information I even learned about my brother through the film.
Right. And Brian, you are featured prominently in the film. Did I pronounce your name correctly?
You did.
Okay,
you did.
Well, I'm glad to have done that. Tell us about your take on seeing yourself and seeing this whole story unfold on film.
Well, Luke is laughing right now because there's this one part that I'm sure he's thinking about that I say a little joke or something and I just start laughing at myself. And it's probably my most embarrassing part in the film personally, but apparently the whole crowd thinks it's funny. So a lot of people apparently have called me the comedic relief. So I'm still waiting for my Hollywood agent to, you know, pop over to me. But
well, you never know. You never know. I should point out that you also have a disability. Why don't you tell our audience what that is about? And it'll put some things in perspective.
So similarly to Gabe, I have a form of muscular dystrophy, less severe than his. Mine was not progressive in that it didn't get worse. I have a form called Ulrich congenital muscular dystrophy. So while I'm non-ambulatory and use a wheelchair, I can pretty much do everything that I need to do on my own. You know, live independently, drive a car, and go to work and everything like that.
So, which Gabe could not do.
Yes.
He could do very, very little for himself.
Well, he could do very little by himself, but he developed a support system on his own that, you know, he had people working for him 24/7, and he had, you know, probably 30 people on staff that he managed that allowed him to do whatever he wanted to do and go wherever he wanted to go, whether that was going out to lunch, which he did every single day of the week, going and running errands, going to a party, going to a concert or a music festival, or traveling across the country. He did anything he wanted to do. So although his disability was very limiting to what he could do physically on his own, it didn't limit him from living his life. He was somebody who truly lived each day to its fullest.
Emilio, can you tell us about growing up with Gabe, what it was like for him as a youngster? Because I think I had mentioned earlier that his life expectancy was very, very short, and then it was extended.
Yeah.
But what was it like growing up in this atmosphere with this kind of thing hanging over the entire family?
Well, when I was younger, because at the time when I came around and I got older, everything, it was just normal. Like, nothing was different. He wasn't different. He wasn't sick. You know, he was still my brother, and we were the type of family that we're just going to do whatever we have to do to help him live his life and how he wants to be. You know, he wasn't different from me in any way, skin tone or anything, which was hard going through school and Gabe being in the hospital quite a few times and, you know, wondering when he's going to get out. But he would always bounce back, you know. So, yeah, once we found out that he was going to live till, who knows, like 50s or 60s, it stunned all of us. And that's the best news we could have ever heard.
And how did that evolve? I mean, clearly there was every expectation they would have a very short life. What happened?
Well, what I know is, like, when I was younger, we would always be, like, I always heard that he would be lucky to live past 18 and graduate. And then once I got older and he got past 18, there didn't really seem to be a time clock. But when I was living out in California is when my mom told me they went to the doctor and they found out he might not have Duchenne. And to me, that was just like, okay, so what is it then, you know? And what's it going to do? What did they say? And then I found out he was going to live so much longer, and it was so much a relief, you know, not having to have, like, a ticking time clock and all of us having to worry about when it's going to happen.
Sure, sure. Luke, you didn't get to meet Gabe until he was older, obviously, but
right.
you do address all of this in the film. And one of the things that that struck me was the fact that he wasn't considered very bright for some reason. There was a time in which they thought that his intelligence level was actually quite low. But there's an episode in the documentary in which a teacher turned all of that around. Tell us how that happened.
That's right, yeah. So, you know, a lot of times when we see somebody with a physical disability, we conflate that and assume that there's also some sort of mental deficit. And certainly a lot of people did that with Gabe. But Gabe was an incredibly bright young man. And when he went to school, he initially was testing pretty low percentile.
About 30%.
Yeah. Yep. And, you know, his family all knew and thought of him as a very bright young man that was just underperforming for one reason or another. Then he had a teacher in about fourth grade that really said, you know, Gabe, you're going to be a full member of this class. We're not going to treat you any differently, give you any special accommodations. And so he really made sure that that was the case. And just that little bit of pushing him, you know, to be his best self and to work, you know, in the capacity that everyone else was working, led him to end up testing that year in the 90th percentile. So it really opened up who he really was.
It was really a question of inclusion. Gabe,
exactly.
You're going to do everything that we do, and that just seemed to change everything.
That's exactly it. And that's a big theme in the film. That's a big theme within the disability community is how similar we are and how able Gabe was when given the opportunity and treated in such a way that allowed him to showcase it.
And you don't get into Washington University when you're 30%.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. That's a true testament to his intelligence and also his work ethic. He was a really incredibly hard worker. Mm-hmm. I saw that as his note taker. He took his schooling incredibly seriously and yeah, more so than a lot of us did. So he was an admirable student.
Great scenes in the film as well as graduation at Washington at Washington University.
Yeah, it was a really special moment to be there and witness that, something that he never thought he was going to accomplish. And at one point, that really was his singular goal in life, was go to college. So to have that all come together was really awesome. And then But then also led to this question, well, what do I do next? What do I do with all this time that I haven't necessarily planned for?
It must have been a great moment, Amelia, for the family to experience that graduation.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I wish I could have partaked, but I was out in California.
Well, you've seen the film now, so you know
what
it's
yeah.
like. Ryan, let me come back to you because mm-hmm. there's another part of the film that kind of struck me. You guys obviously got along. You've already alluded to that. You joke with each other. But I think you called him... Let's see if I can remember correctly. You called him your nemesis, or was it the other way around?
We were just talking about this in the green room. Yep. So I like to say that Gabe and I met twice in life. Very early on, when I was about 12 and Gabe was 14, I went to the muscular dystrophy summer camp held out in, I guess it was Babbler State Park at that point in time. And I was pretty excited because I... had just gotten this brand new wheelchair with all these bells and whistles on it. And I thought I was going to be, you know, the coolest kid at camp, with, you know, the nice new toy to show off to everybody. But as soon as I get there, I noticed that there's another kid that has the same exact wheelchair, all the fun things on it, except it's in this bright, obnoxious orange color. And lo and behold, that individual that had it was Gabe. And so in my mind, he was now my arch nemesis, you know, showing me up from when I was going to be the, you know, the cool kid when I was 12. And I never really chatted with Gabe because we were in separate, you know, age groups cabin-wise at that point in time. But it stuck in my memory. And then years later, you know, I would run into Gabe, whether it was the movie theater or something like that, since we were a similar age. And he would be there, you know, with his buddies or whatnot, taking the good wheelchair accessible seats when my friends and I showed up a little late and we had to sit to the side. And so it's like my nemesis struck again.
Well, how did you overcome that? How did you become the best buddies that you did?
So we met when we were both at Wash U. And, you know, I think we had kind of known of each other a little bit and maybe exchanged some emails about, you know, how best to, you know, live independently, you know, on your own and do the college thing, you know, hiring personal care attendants so you can get to class, you know, get up and ready in the morning. And so we eventually set up a lunch meeting just to kind of, you know, trade some tips and everything. And it started a routine of us having lunch, you know, once a week or every couple of weeks for a while. And, you know, before you know it, you kind of realize, okay, it's not just the disability we have in common. It is, you know, all these other interests. He liked food. I liked food. We both liked music. Similar interests. I mean, we were just, you know, two college, you know, young men, you know, going at it. So a lot of similarities.
The film shows that you guys got along very well with the other members of the student body, too. I mean, you seem to have really, really good connections with the rest of the people there.
Absolutely. Some of my closest friends today are all of the ones that, you know, I met through Gabe or vice versa. It's just a real tight-knit group. And some of those are people that, you know, helped us with our personal care and kind of helped us figure out what it means or what it takes for us to, you know, live a fully independent life with a disability. And through that, I mean, that's a very big bonding experience.
Acceptance is critical, is it not? I mean, if you're excluded, it just makes a bad situation that much worse.
Absolutely. Yeah. And there is not a situation that we got into with our friends where they would not think that, you know, there wasn't a way for us to, you know, figure out how to be included in it, you know.
Let me turn back to Luke Terrell now, the director of the film, Gabe. A couple of things about the film that really struck me. One was the remarkable relationship that Gabe had with his caregivers and his friends. Extremely emotional. I mean, these young people, yourself included, were so totally involved. And it was like Gabe was just one of them. There was no difference whatsoever. I thought that was remarkable.
Yeah, you know, I think not only was Gabe one of them, Gabe was really the centerpiece of this really incredible friend group. You know, he, as Brian just alluded, brought a lot of us together, a lot of people that wouldn't have necessarily met one another otherwise. And that was a real gift and skill that he had, was to bring really incredible people together. Then you go on something like a road trip with someone like Gabe, there's necessarily a lot of problem solving that happens along the way. And so you continue to grow closer and closer in a really kind of expedited fashion. So yeah, it was a really incredible group of friends that Gabe brought together and was the centerpiece of.
Terrifically loyal. And of course, in your film, you have a road trip that was a significant road trip. It was not just around the block. It was around the country, wasn't it?
That's right. Yeah. And so with Gabe, you know, we drive everywhere. Gabe couldn't fly. And so we would fill these vans, pack them with all the gear, the medical supplies that we needed, go on our way. And so, yeah, it was long days to get out. We drove all the way out to California. It'd be, you know, a couple hours in the morning packing the van, then drive all day, a couple hours to unpack, get Gabe in bed, wake up, do the same thing the next day. But it obviously was well worth it. Those were some of the best memories that any of us have.
I want to tell our audience and be sure that I get this in that the St. Louis Filmmakers Showcase presentation of Gabe is going to be tonight at 7:30 at the Tivoli Theater in University City. And we are talking about that film, and we have with us in studio people who are associated with Gabe Weil, about whom the film is all about. With me in studio are Luke Terrell. You just heard from him. He's the director of the film, and it's really a good film, folks. Brian Chow is with us. He was Gabe Weil's best friend. And also arch nemesis, as we have pointed out. And Amelia Weil is Gabe Weil's sister. Amelia, let me come back to you because we've mentioned on the program before, because we've talked about the film before, that your parents are very good friends of St. Louis Public Radio and always have been. Tell me something about them and the way they handled that and about your remarkable family.
Well... Besides how amazing my family is.
Josephine and Richard.
I absolutely adore my parents. I think they're one of the strongest people I've ever met. You know, they've always rooted for Gabe, and they really rooted for this film. And all any of us ever wanted was for Gabe to be whoever he wanted to be. And for him to be able to feel like he can go to an apartment and live on his own and... you know, just use us as his body when need be. My family have gone through a lot of ups and downs, but they've always just been who they are. And they've always been very upbeat, and we've always known that he was going to make it, you know. My family, both my parents are cubs. Like, we're their babies, and they'll fight for us till the end. Mm-hmm.
They are a remarkable couple, and you have, what, four? How many brothers and sisters?
I have three older brothers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Back to Luke, because I want to get into something you raised, an issue you raised a moment or two ago.
Sure.
With what happens now following graduation. This is a dilemma for a lot of young people, but for someone in Gabe's position, even more so. Tell us about how as a young foodie, I'll mention that part of it, he began to think about his future.
Yeah, so, you know, that's one of the relatable moments, I think, in the film is Gabe graduates, and yes, he has the extenuating circumstances of having this disability, but it's a question and a scenario that a lot of us face. What do we do once we've graduated college? And so Gabe really did a lot of soul searching that first year, and part of that was traveling around with his friends and having discussions. And as you said, he was a big foodie. And he found that to be not just a passion, but in some ways a calling. As his condition progressed a little bit, he started having trouble chewing tougher foods. And so he discovered juicing as a way to get a lot of nutrients and calories that he was maybe starting to miss out on. And when Gabe became passionate about something, he dove in headfirst. So he ended up learning more about juicing than any of us know, anyone else to know about. And as far as tastes and flavor profiles, and also as far as nutritional and health benefits. And so he really dove into the juicing world and started thinking, maybe I should open a juice bar. Maybe that's something that could be in my future. And so that's discussed a little bit in the film, and it was a really exciting pursuit to witness from the sideline.
Apparently, that was a very good choice for him because, as you point out in the film, he had an especially sensitive ability to taste.
That's right. There's a great scene in the film regarding Gabe's palate and a time that he had gone to a restaurant with his family. And he ordered a dish and was able to note that it was missing nutmeg, this really specific spice. And the chef confirmed that he was right. And thus, we kind of have this indication that Gabe was not just into food, but actually very talented and had a really nice, really good palate.
The perfect pitch for
taste.
You had a big smile on your face when the word juicing came up.
Oh. My brother Gabe would go through, ever since I was little, there was always phases of different stuff he would do. And he, like Luke said, like he would go in head first, like infusing like vodkas and all this different stuff he used to do. And then he was really into tea. And so then when he got into juicing, I was like, here we go. Uh-huh. That just seems to fit with him because tea's not that far from juice. It's only, you drink it. It's different flavors. And I just can picture my brother in his office, like, convincing me to try this one juice. And I'm like, I don't know what's in it. I'm not going to do it. And he's like, just do it. And, of course, I would because it's like I can't say no to my brother. He was, like, the closest one I was with. And so I would always drink it, and I'd be like, what is – like, I couldn't tell anything that was in it. And it didn't taste, like, gross or, like, wheatgrass or something that I'm not into. It was actually good, and it intrigued me to, like, actually try more of his juices. So I just can picture him in his office doing that and, like, writing down different stuff. And I still – I'm trying to look for some of those recipes because that would be awesome to have. And yeah.
I got that you were kind of out of the picture for a while. You said you were in California for a part of his growing up and that. How long were you separated that way?
I was in California for about 2.5 years.
Right. And during what period of his life was that and yours?
More like when the film was really starting to progress and getting close to the time it was finished. So I was like about 20 and he was about 26.
Brian, this whole juicing thing, you mentioned that you're something of a foodie too early on. Were you involved in this project at all?
You know, we were just in the kind of beginning stages of talking about, you know, what he wanted to do with his life and everything now that it appeared that he had this time. And, Gabe had a tremendous creative mind, and, I mean, it amazed me what he was really able to do. You know, think about somebody with a physical disability. Mm-hmm. He could tell them, you know, what, you know, particular machinery to use and settings and whatnot, whereas, you know, me and cooking and everything like that, if I can't do it, I can't tell you what to do. But, you know, we were complimentary in the fact that I have a background in accounting, by trade and everything like that, and general business, and he had this creative mindset. So we were starting to develop a plan where he'd be the creative end of the juicing empire that would be Gabe, and I'd manage the business.
You'd cook the books, right?
Exactly, the books.
Whatever.
So.
Is that what your profession now? You're an accountant?
I am. So I'm a lot of other things. I worked for a bank here in town for 3 years or so, doing internal audit, you know, accounting that way. And then recently, through people that I met with Gabe, now work for the Starkloff Disability Institute.
Good friends of ours. Yep.
Yeah, good friends of St. Louis Public Radio, managing their business operations and finances and all. So it was a great way to combine my, you know, skill set with my passion.
Well, congratulations to you for finding your way, as it were, graduation. Luke, I want to come back to you because there was a very sensitive part of the film that I don't want to belabor the subject, but I think it's important. Gabe was a young man. He had the same hormones that any young man has, and that was something that had to be attended to. You did that very, very sensitively, I thought. You want to just talk very briefly about that?
Sure, yeah. I appreciate you addressing the sensitive nature of that topic. And it was a really tough one for me as both Gabe's friend and the director of the film to navigate. Certainly, it was a really important part of his life at that stage. And it was, to me, a really important part of his story, especially if you look at the story, a big theme is the humanization of Gabe and of people with disabilities. And what was more human than that scene? And so Gabe initially didn't want that to be a part of the film, and it really made sense to me. It was obviously really personal in nature, but also he doesn't really get to keep any secrets from people. If he wants to send a text, it has to be through someone else. And so he told me, well, maybe this is the one thing that I get to keep to myself and that doesn't have to be shared with the world. But ultimately he came around, and I'm glad that he did because it's a really powerful part of the film. And as is pretty eloquently put in the film by Brendan, it wasn't just about the physical, you know, experience. It really was about the independence and being able to feel autonomous and feel real and connect to others in that way.
Did Gabe live to see the film?
He did. Yeah, we did a really, really great screening in April of last year at the St. Louis Art Museum. We had 450 people in attendance, and at the end, Gabe was sitting in the middle where the accessible seating is, and at the end, everyone stood up and turned towards him and gave him a standing ovation, and it was one of those perfect moments in life.
Only 30 seconds left, but the end came in a very tragic way because it shouldn't have happened.
Indeed, yeah. And, you know, it's something that we've added on now as an epilogue to the film, but it doesn't change the story and it doesn't change the message that Gabe leaves us with, how to live life well.
A faulty piece of equipment cost him his life.
Indeed, yeah. It's tough to swallow, but we're happy to celebrate Gabe's life and continue sharing his legacy through the film.
Thank you so much, all of you, for being with us. That film is going to be shown tonight at 7:30 at the Tivoli Theater. Brian Chow, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, Don.
And Luke Terrell, thank you so much for being with us.
Congratulations.
Appreciate it. St. Louis on the Air is a production of St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Thank you for listening. I'm Don Marsh.